You have any
All right,
breaking
so we'll
news?
have
Is there
our.
any Lucas Kroll news that we need to know about today?
Nah,
Anything?
No, no,
nothing,
no
nothing like that
today.
We need to start
nah,
with?
No. Nah.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol United Saints Podcast.
What's up, Houdat Nation, and thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff, and in this episode, we've got a special treat for you. Our new friend, Nick Underhill, stopped by the Dome Patrol Podcast studio to give us and you a chance to get to know him a little better. And of course, we asked for his opinion on a few Saints topics. Here's our conversation with Nick Underhill.
All right, with us today for this conversation, we've got James and Wesley from the Dome Patrol Podcast, and we have Nick Underhill as our special guest. I want to welcome you, Nick. This is your debut on the Dome Patrol Podcast. I believe you have a contract to appear 13 times a year for the next 4 years on our podcast, so I appreciate you.
Is that what Wesley got me on? He got me a meal at his restaurant. Now I'm an indentured servant to the podcast.
That's how that works, yeah. No, we do appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us before training camp starts.
For us, it actually starts on the 27th, so it's just we're still in the holding pattern until anything happens. But yeah, the rookies reported Lonte Taylor signed, so things are starting to happen. Football's almost here.
Yeah. All right, so we'll jump right into some questions. But obviously, we want to pick your brain about your assessment of the Saints. I believe the Houdat Nation kind of has adopted you as the foremost authority on and kind of like the most reliable source of Saints news and Saints information. I think you've earned that right through hard work and quality reporting. So kudos to you. But I think before we go into that, let's maybe get a chance for our listeners who may not know you to get a little bit know about who's Nick Underhill. One of the first things I've always been curious myself, you know, with anybody who goes into sports journalism, what was it? Was it something in your formative years? Tell us a little bit about what made you decide to go into sports journalism, and then maybe ultimately, when did you decide football and or Saints?
So yeah, I mean, it's kind of a long winding road, but the cliff notes of it would be that like I was kind of an idiot kid, didn't really have much direction in high school or anything like that. It actually took me 13th grade to get out of high school. And I had an English teacher that just kind of was on me and, you know, telling me, hey, like, I think you can write. I think this is something that you could do. She got me like a little part-time gig at the local newspaper in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I grew up. And it just kind of clicked. And it was just kind of really the only thing that I could do, or the only thing that ever really captured my interest, like sitting through like a music class or history class. Like, it's just, that was never my thing. So that's just, it kind of found me, I guess, is how I'd put it. And then, originally I wanted to be a baseball writer, and I started out covering the Boston Red Sox, and I did that for a year, and it was just really the most miserable experience of my life. Being around that game, it's just every single day there's a game, and it was just not something that I really like to do. And then I started covering the Patriots, and it just kind of fit better. It was more up my alley. There's more time to analyze things. Everything means a little bit more, and it's not 162 games. Like there's weight to everything. So It just kind of some of the stuff I learned about covering baseball and like the numbers and the stats and then the analysis, like there weren't a lot of people doing that in football at the time. So like it kind of like the baseball experience helped, I think, the football reporting, but football was definitely something that fit me a lot better. And all these years later, here we are.
Tied with that, like you've always been kind of somebody that's clearly watches plenty of film, because like you've come back and like over the last 3 years, they ran this play this many times, and I watched every time they threw a pass to this guy. Is that baseball monotony allowed you to do that in football, but not be bored and crazy by it?
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, look, I'd say the one thing that I'm like really good at is just kind of sitting there and doing something. And I can convince myself that like doing the most boring thing in the world is going to pay off. And it's just like, well, nobody else is doing this and I'm doing it. And I kind of put a chip on my shoulder about it and I'll hype myself up into it. And there's probably like a lot of anger, like inside of me that I create to sit through those moments. But yeah, I think just kind of being willing to go through that, look for it. It is a little baseball-esque, but there's just also, you know, like I'm aware that I'm not, at least in my mind, like I'm not the most talented writer. I'm not going to write like Hemingway. Like my prose isn't going to blow anyone away. Like I believe that it's going to take the hard work and the research and kind of, you know, going to that place is my edge. And, you know, I never want to lose that. And, you know, just kind of doing that and being willing to discipline myself in that way is kind of the thing that I think I've been able to hang my hat on. And I mean, I just, that was my edge. I don't know how I found it, but I found it. And yeah, maybe it is kind of baseball-esque. You know, when I was first starting to cover football, like there weren't a lot of stat services. Like now you can find, you know, if you want to spend the money to find out how many out routes somebody ran, like you can pay the money and get it. But like in 2010, 2011, like you had to go through and watch every single play and, you know, going through and watching every single play. And then I do that still. And I look at somebody else's numbers and they're different than my numbers. And it's like, well, I trust myself more than them. So like, it's just, it's not something that I'm ever going to stop doing. And I think just watching them too, like you learn. And if you're watching for every Mike Thomas slant, like you're going to see every play. And then you just pick up other things like while doing this research project that sparks this idea over here. And, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand. So I just feel like you do kind of got to study it, watch it, and you can go to a website and look it up, but like, you aren't going to have like the same education that you get by like disciplining yourself and watching those plays.
They have those schools and online programs. Did you teach yourself NFL schemes and reading defenses and offenses, or, I mean, just by doing it, or did you go to any of those online schools and participate in any of that?
Yeah, I did. I've done some of the different online classes. I read a lot of like really boring books, like, you know, beating pass coverage with the, you know, or beating zone defenses with the passing game, or
I'd like a list, please.
Yeah, complete linebacking, complete offensive line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, a lot of coaching books, I think, or, you know, that's kind of how you pick it up and how you learn a lot of different things. Or, you know, I got a book on quarters coverage. Like you just kind of got to do like really boring things to kind of learn some of the stuff, and then watching it as well.
Is that stuff you've done in the past? You don't, or do you continue to continued education kind of thing? And then is your selection of what to read or what to kind of grow in directed like by maybe what the Saints are doing or what the Saints will be doing? Because, you know, for example, all right, Dennis Allen's going to be running the team like this. This is the kind of offense Carmichael's going to run. This is the kind of defense we have. So let me study up on things that I might anticipate for the upcoming season. Or is it just general?
No, it's definitely that. I mean, there's some general, you know, what is this? How does this work? You know, but yeah, I mean, is they change some of the stuff they do, like the things I'm interested in and the things that are going to help my coverage or dictated on some of the stuff I see them doing. And then, you know, the other thing too, is just when you're around long enough, like you start to get connects and you find coaches that you can talk to, players you can talk to, and you can ask them about different things they're doing. So yeah, that education process never stops. You know, that there's still a lot that I definitely do not know. I mean, like the game it's complex and there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And yeah, I feel like, you know, I'm just scratching the surface on my knowledge, but like, I feel like you got to keep doing that work to, you know, know what you're watching and then be able to break it down into a simple term. Like the one mistake I think some people do is like, they go to like, they'll go to one of these classes online or they'll read a book and they start talking in these like very complex terms. And it's, you got to think about like how much you put in to get to the point to learn these things. And most of the people reading your stuff aren't. So like, you got to be able to actually understand it and then break it down into ways and pieces that like anybody can read it. And it's not too far over their head. So, you know, I think that process is always ongoing.
I think that's a tough thing for us to remember too. Like, so I have Saints friends, a couple of people that I can talk to about what's going on year round. I have a really good friend of mine that I watch 15 games a year with, huge Saints fan, but he might not know that we have Jarvis Landry on the team right now. Like, I mean, he really, like,
leave me
the
out
off season. He has no idea. Like he's not getting online, looking at anything. He's not listening to any podcasts. He's going out to dinner and, you know, getting drinks after.
He's a like, Saints fan 16 days.
Yeah, for sure. 17. But, yeah, for sure. And so, and he's a big Saints fan. There's a lot of people like that probably watch 13 games a year and truly don't know any of that stuff. So yeah. they if they pick up your first article and it has all this complex stuff, like, well, I don't need to read that.
Right. Like I look at some scouting reports and it's just like, you know, are you writing this for like an online audience, or is it like are you hoping Bill Belichick sees it and thinks how smart you are? And I think that's where people get lost with this stuff.
Right. But I think you made the comment that, like, oh, I'm not a Hemingway, I don't write like that. I don't think you should, honestly. I mean, again, yeah, you got to know your audience, and you.
Right. Yeah, Louisiana is 50th in education. Like, we just need to lean into that a little bit.
Hey, man, the football fans are like number one in education. Though, so.
All the other media, do they not get it? Or, I mean, do they not understand what they're watching on film? Or do they simply just not have the patience for it? Clearly have, like, set yourself apart in something in a very short amount of time with a team that has a very passionate fan base. There is a difference of the way you're covering the team and the respect that you've gotten in a very short amount of time.
You know, I guess the mantra for me is that, like, I kind of always want to be there where the fans are at. That's the thing I always tell people. And, you know, if everybody's excited about Jarvis Landry and you know, those are the moments, like, you got to show up, you got to be a part of that conversation. You got to find a way to add something to it to help people contextualize it. And, you know, I think maybe that's not even something I did great at the beginning. And I've kind of gotten, you know, I kind of used to be a little bit more prickly about, like, some of the topics or, like, speculating on things and that. And I think I've kind of found a better balance of that over time. Like, I didn't want to lend credence to, like, you know, clicky topics or whatever, but, like, sometimes that's what people are super into at the moment before free agency or whatever. So, you know, I just always want to be there. It doesn't, you know, if everybody's talking about this thing, like, I think it's, you got to meet them there. And that's just kind of the way I try to approach it. And yeah, I mean, I think that there's kind of maybe,
does that lead us into wanting to talk about the Quan Alexander possible signing? Because I saw you got roped into that again today.
As a coach, right? I mean.
The thing with Quan, look, I understand why everybody likes him, and I'm just gonna, you know, if your second round pick can be outplayed, you know, if you can sign somebody that 31 other teams don't want on July 19th and he's starting above your second round pick, you messed up your draft. Like, that is not something that you should be actively hoping for, because that means now you're spending money to replace your second round pick. That's resources gone. Your second round pick isn't getting hit for you. You don't have a cost controlled player that's ascending in your system. So if Quan comes in and can start over Pete Werner, you messed up your draft, and that is not a good thing.
Well, it's kind of the mic drop. It's late July and 31 other teams haven't signed him.
Yeah.
What else are we talking about?
That's it. Like, maybe your thought process on what he is as a player isn't accurate.
But you think if he wasn't
Alexander from 4 years ago, they want who they remember Quan as being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that a lot of times with a lot of players. Go ahead, James. Sorry.
I think the fact that he's an ex-LSU player has probably got more to do with it, hasn't it?
For sure.
It's that he brings a lot of energy. You notice him when he's on the field and he's fast. Like, he pops off the screen. When he makes a play, you really know he's making a play. But, you know, it's the moments in the run game where you don't see him flying across the screen, and you know, he's in the wrong gap, and that isn't going to pop out, you know, on a TV broadcast to the average person. And, you know, it's those things that have led him to not be on another team right now on July 19th.
I've said a bunch of times he is the overpaid version of Stephon Anthony. He might make 150 tackles, but he's also in the wrong place of the field a whole bunch of time, missing a gap and missing a play too. So just because he had a whole bunch of tackles and also over-celebrated when he did get those doesn't mean he's a great football player.
So quick, this makes me think of this conversation. Makes me, and I do want to
talk about way
question.
Too much fun. I should.
Well, no, I mean, so does Andres Pete or Cesar Ruiz deserve the amount of ridicule, or I don't want to say hatred, that's a strong word, but deserve what Saints fans give them and say about them? Or is it one of those things where you only see the plays?
One of them offensive linemen.
and how much of that was coaching or being put in the wrong position? I don't like what do they deserve that kind of harsh evaluation, or are they better than we think they are?
I would say maybe it would depend on which Monday morning this question is being asked. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You know, I would say the one thing with Pete is if you look at the running game to the left side of the field last year, they were like a yard and a half lower than they usually are. And that was mostly because he wasn't out there. And their screen game suffers a lot when he isn't playing. It's that stuff out in space he's really good at. when he misses in the pass game, it's because he has this like seek and destroy type mentality when he's blocking, and he gets too far out over his toes. And then when he loses, he falls back and you see him and it's extremely obvious. And, you know, it's huge losses. It's not just like someone subtly beating him. It's like you see him losing because of the nature of his play. So I think sometimes it's a little too inconsistent. Ruiz, I think, definitely probably deserves a lot of the criticism. But, I would contextualize that and say that, like, he's come in under tough circumstances. He changes positions. It's two off seasons where he doesn't have the off season program. You know, the mini camp, the OTAs, that's when they go back to the basics, like straight up down to like, here's how you get set in a 3-point stance. And here's, you know, the right way to do this and the right way to do that. And I think having a lot of those things could help him this year. I mean, this is the do or die season, though. Like, I don't think there's room for any more patience after this. It's, you have to be good right now. And if you aren't, you know, your NFL career is probably going to go in a different direction. So there's a little bit of, I guess, forgiveness for Ruiz, but probably not enough to exonerate him from everything that we've seen so far. So he's got to figure something out quickly to,
is it okay to believe that he can turn it around, or is it kind of like, I'm not, if I'm a betting man, I'm not putting more than $10 on it.
Well, I mean, I probably wouldn't, you know, it's not a bet I'd put a lot on. I mean, just because you got 2 years of what it is, but I'm not saying that I would, you know, short it either, like with a significant amount of money either. So I think it's just kind of a wait and see thing. You know, I think there's some stuff. I think getting Doug Marrone in helps him a lot. I mean, if he's got everything now to kind of put it together. He's got the right coaching. He's got the right off season. You know, it's all got to click for him at this point. So, if he fails, it's not because the everything around him wasn't there. It's because he couldn't figure it out himself.
Yeah.
I think it's a tough thing for a fan base and on both sides. So one, if you watch 100% of the plays of a team, you've seen all the good and the bad.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to say like, oh, that guy's good. I've watched him make 10 bad plays last year. Well, everybody else in the position could have made 13. You just don't know that. On the other side, like the Lattimore stuff that come out, I have friends that are Saints fans are like, why is he number two on the list? Like, he's missed lots of balls. I was like, those other guys are too. Ramsey gives up to catches and touchdowns. Let's not act like he's shutting everybody down. Lattimore legitimately belongs on that list. And just because you've seen his bad plays and you remember those, same thing with Marcus Williams. Saints fans love to hate on Marcus Williams because his bad plays were huge missed tackles. The guy was amazing at playing safety and doing what he did and not letting the ball get deep. But everybody was like, let's get rid of him. Why would we pay him that much? And it's hard when you see all of their plays, but you're not watching every other game.
Those were kind of the biggest. Right?
They were big.
They were. People don't realize that like Jalen Ramsey gives up. Like the NFL has just changed. Like 2009 Darrelle Revis season, like that's probably just not going to happen again. Like too much has changed. There's too many role changes. Like you can't shut people down the same way you could even 10, 11, 12 years ago. So that type of football is just, it's gone. But I thought Lattimore probably had his best season since the rookie year. And look, the thing about the rookie year people kind of forget is that like it lost momentum at a certain point and there was an injury. I think he like hurt his hamstring and then he came back and then he just wasn't quite the same like the last four or five games of that season. But I thought he was really good last year. And then, you know, this year I think it sets up, and if he goes through that gauntlet, there's 13 games where he's probably against the top 10 wide receiver, top 15 wide receiver. He blanks every single one of them. That'll be absolutely minted, and I don't think anybody can really say anything about him. The funny thing is, though, if you're actually watching him closely, it's going to be those other four games where he's against guys that nobody's ever heard of that are actually going to be the moments where you're like, wow, is he playing well or not? I mean, because those are the games that he historically hasn't done too well in. But I thought last year he was pretty even. And look, we saw that starting in training camp. Like the first couple of years in the league, like there were moments where he was out of practice and the focus wasn't there. He wasn't practicing well. Aaron Glenn's yelling at him to step it up and, you know, all these different things. And last year he looked like he was locked in every single day during camp and, you know, mini camp, he looked the same way. So I think he's just kind of maybe found a level of maturity as he gets deeper into his career that's going to serve him well going forward.
I thought it said a lot about the timing of the contract last year, like early in the year, right after he was hurt. I mean, they knew he was hurt when signing it, and I'm sure they've been negotiating a long time, but the fact that they believed in his maturity to say, we can give him this contract right now and he's still going to perform for us this season. I thought said a lot about their perception.
Yeah.
One question I have about your coverage. So you have gained a reputation for not necessarily breaking news, but releasing a full-on article 5 seconds after news comes out. I've heard it talked about between multiple Saints fans that, well, other people are tweeting the first tweet that it happened, and Nick just released an article that's a couple pages long. So my question would be, do you have a personal theory on why you necessarily don't like to break news?
I think I break a good amount of news.
Well, I mean, I know, but it looks like you probably have had opportunities where there was more that you've risk of maybe the 1% of being wrong, or is that just not what your focus and theory and kind of what you want to do?
Sometimes, like, you know things, but you aren't necessarily getting it. You know, there's off the record, and then there's like real off the record, right? like someone will tell you something, they'll be like, this is off the record, but that means you can say via source. And then there's like, okay, I'm going to tell you this and tip you off to it so you're ready, but you cannot say anything until I give you a green light. And then sometimes your green light comes in time for you to break the story. And sometimes it comes a moment after somebody else, because there's a million people that know when something happens. There's a family, a player, agents, team personnel, coaches, teammates. So sometimes maybe somebody else gets it just that moment before, while you're kind of waiting for your person to feel comfortable enough to tell you like, okay, go ahead, pull the trigger. So, you know, sometimes that's how that stuff happens, but I'm fine.
People
with
still
it.
Regularly bring up your Marcus Davenport article. Like, you released a Marcus Davenport article before he put his hat on.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I did. I mean, that was
not... Look, on that one, I'd just say that there was a lot of moving pieces. I did break the draft pick. Like, they actually had to be in a position to make the trade to get him and everything. So, yeah, I mean, that was a decent night for us. Yeah.
That was awesome.
Predictive analysis working.
On that point, then, have you had articles written for draft picks that didn't transpire?
Only once. It was the 2020 draft. I was kind of, I don't want to say the name, I was prepared for a wide receiver that didn't get selected. So that one went in that one's still sitting in the draft somewhere.
I think we were all.
So I was prepared for a wide receiver and Zach Bond in the first round. And
oh wow.
I think, yeah. I mean, and look, if you go back and listen to the comments, they were trying to trade up from the minute they made a pick until that kind of went by. So that was I think definitely possible at the end of the first round.
I have a sports coverage question. So as fans, we, and even with the Dome Patrol podcast, we get aggravated or frustrated when, say, the national talking heads come in, even whether it's the desk pregame, postgame, or it's during the game, you have your color guy, and they're speaking in generalities, right? And I've always wondered, are they getting talking points from the team and they're essentially just reading the talking points? But a lot of times it feels like they know a lot less about the reality. And granted, it's because they're, I would assume, like, they don't have the time to get in depth. They're not on covering the team like we are. Are they handed stuff, or
I think they're generally
have their own
unaware.
Scouts?
I think sometimes they just don't know. I think sometimes they definitely don't know. You know, there's some national people that text me all the time and like, hey, like, what's going on with this guy? So like, there's some people that do their homework. There's some people that actually know people on the team. But yeah, I think it's there's a pressure to go on TV and talk about topics, and some people are prepared to talk to them and some people aren't. And, you know, I appreciate the ones who aren't, who hit me up and they're like, hey, is this like, what do you think about this or this or this? And it's like, you know, I would rather help someone, because when they say something, half the time it creates work for me, because then people are like asking me about it. And it's like, I don't want to be mean to this person, but like, you're saying something stupid and now like a million people are asking me about it. So, right. I get as aggravated about it as anybody else. Cause it's just like, you've created a narrative now that just isn't real.
And right. And it's because they only see that 60,000 foot view of things. So they're going to speak on what the, just that surface level is, and then they're going to not realize all of the actual details that are underneath that are going on with the team, and why, okay, what you said is the most generic thing you could possibly say.
Yeah.
And yet you're nationally respected.
I got a question about the 2022 New Orleans Saints. Is last year's record the floor? Like, I mean, truly, is that, I mean, with all the upgrades we've made and like every problem in the world we had last year that led to a 9-win season, is that the floor?
I think that's probably fair. I think that's probably a fair place for it to go. I think even if like Mike Thomas isn't 100%, like they should still be able to win 9 games. So that's probably a decent place. I haven't really thought about this. I'm kind of going through like scenarios in my head, like Alvin missing a bunch of games and Mike not being healthy could make life a little difficult, but I still think they find a way to get to 9 games with the defense and Olave and Jarvis and, you know, assuming health and other key areas.
So I agree. Michael Thomas can be a question mark. So in the other, one of the things you mentioned, if AK isn't suspended this year, because it sounds like that's at least a possibility now, if AK is not suspended and Jameis doesn't regress, we'll just very vague term regress, where can this
picks
go?
Up where he left off.
So I think they could get into the playoffs, and then if they get into the playoffs, like anything can happen there. Look at the Bengals last year. Like they just got hot at the right time. So it's, you know, once you're in there, anything's possible with that defense. They're capable of beating anybody. I don't know that I would put them as like a Super Bowl contender before we see any play, but I think they get into the playoffs and are dangerous. At least I think that's probably how I'd put it. You know, my most interesting thing on the season, you know, I'm just curious to see what AK does. Like if he plays 17 games, like I don't know how many passes he's going to catch. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't think he's, you know, it used to be you locked it in it. He's going to have 81 receptions. Like, is that number 50 now? Is it 40? Is it 60? Like, right. That's just not Jameis's game. So I don't even know what his impact is to the passing game. I don't know, you know, like quietly, like my low key hottest take is that like, maybe if he misses some games, it's not as damaging as everybody thinks it's going to be, because I think there's just other ways to get around it in the passing game. I think it hurts your running game, obviously, but I don't know. I think taking AK away from Drew hurts more than taking AK away from Jameis, just because on the way they look at the field and the way they approach the game.
Right. He's got more weapons to look downfield with anyway. And then, but what about if he misses 4 games? Are you happy with the running backs that we have in the room right now, or
is it early or late? If he misses 4 to 6 games in September versus December, like I kind of like the idea of Mark Ingram holding down the fort better in September than I do December, just given his age. Like, you know, I didn't think he looked washed up or old or anything like that last year, but you got to be realistic about his age. And if he's getting 25 carries a game, 20 carries a game, I think he's probably better equipped to do that early in the season than late once he has all that mileage on him.
Yeah.
There's obviously a running back that factors in this. Do you have an early prediction for Camp Beast? don't you hate that term?
I'm going to stick with Lucas Kroll. I'm going to start with the guy I started hyping like it. I'm just going to take it all away at this point. I think that's just my guy. So like if it hits now, like I was with him the whole way. So I'll stick with him. But like I like him at the position too. I think it's open enough that he could surprise there.
I think we did some roster predictions, and a few of us, most of us, predicted that he's going to upset somebody for a roster position. And I mean, that's probably super far fetched.
That's my take on Junior Gallant years ago. He was my camp beast.
on Camp Beast, I think, I mean, obviously Lucas Kroll, I think Abram Smith is probably going to want to run over some people in training camp, like to make a name for himself. And then I had Raheed Shaheed as my camp beast. It looks like he may not be doing that, but it's always good for, I think Jameis can make a wide receiver look really, really good. That's really fast. And then of course we'd never hear that guy's name again after training camp.
He could still get some snaps. Like he was around at least during minicamp and stuff. Okay. So I don't know how bad
I think him and Aesop
are
both pretty interesting with what they can do with the ball in their hands.
But like maybe getting like Rashid on a injury list or something and kind of keeping him there for a while might not be the worst thing, given that Deontay Hardy's in the last year of his contract, and everything I've heard about that is that there's like a significant distance between him and the team on the value. So
I mean, he sees Christian Kirk get $20 million a year. Like Deontay Hardy probably is I can give me a year, I can prove that I'm as good as him in his head. Meanwhile, I can't get sold on that.
Yeah, like Valdez Scantling got a good amount of money. Like so you're looking at all these deals and thinking like, you know, what about me? Because look, he was like really good as a receiver last year. It's just I don't know where he fits on a team. It's tough. Like I think he has the talent, but I just don't know like if he'll ever have the role somewhere to kind of justify that type of money. But I can totally understand seeking it. I don't think he's like outrageous to want like wide receiver money as opposed to just returner money.
So he's potentially what, five on the depth chart this year?
Yeah, I mean, five or six, maybe even. But yeah, I mean, he'll get opportunities just because, like, there's going to be six or seven plays this year where him and Jameis connect, and it's going to be, you know, glorious looking. But yeah, I don't think he outplays. I don't think he outsnaps Tre'Quan Smith or Marquez Callaway if all five make the team.
Yeah.
So speaking of the offense, what would you say to people who are concerned that Pete Carmichael is a retread, or that it's going to be the same old offense, or if he was good enough, he would have already had a job somewhere else by now?
I think the way I'd look at it is, like, the Chargers have one of the top three or four young quarterbacks in the NFL that I think pretty much anybody in the league that doesn't have Joe Burrow or Pat Mahomes or Josh Allen would want to start their team with, and they run the Saints offense with them. And I think if you got the Saints offense in any other team, like, those people will be like, wow, they got the most revolutionary offense. People are judging this team like off a, like, a season where they didn't have any wide receivers, which is crazy to me. And then, like, all the ways that they've reinvented themselves over the years, like the 16 offense and the 17 offense are drastically different from one another, but they found a way to win all these games with a quarterback who couldn't throw the ball down the field and still kept going with it.
It's almost like we forgot what 2011 and, like, how
so crazy
how big the passing game was, the, you know, the deep threat.
This system still works. The thing for me that like where I start to wonder what the impact will be is there is going to be some impact to not having Sean in the room. Like, you still have Pete Carmichael calling everything. You got him cooking stuff up. He was doing a lot of the behind the scenes stuff before, but there's like a level of detail, like Sean spotting a weakness with a cornerback or like somebody with a banged up ankle that can't plant and turn the same way. So you're going to attack them to the left side 13 times during the game, like they did against the Eagles in 18, I think it was. And there's just these little details that Peyton used to pick up. And that had to be the difference between some wins every season. Now, does that mean Carmichael isn't going to see those things? No, but until we know what the floor is, or, you know, how much higher up Sean was keeping the floor, it's tough to know kind of what.
Can we hire somebody to do that? I mean, can we hire somebody to sit on the sideline and watch for that shit and then be like, dude, okay, look right here.
I think Sean was special.
That's the, like, what are we losing with Sean more than anything? If that's what we're losing, there's got to be ways that you can actually try to compensate for that.
And look, I'll say that, like I think everybody, like, around the team, the coaches, players, team personnel, like, I think there's a little bit of a sigh of relief that this maniacal person that was just killing them on every single detail isn't around. But I think that killing on details probably created an edge too. And, like, maybe
it standards, works. I look at it. It's standards.
Yeah. And I'm not saying DA isn't keeping up a standard or anything like that, but, like, and it might still work that way, but, like, Sean having everybody on edge probably was a key to success too. So, like, do you find new ways to create that success, that drive? I mean, it's not like the defense has been struggling or anything like that. So obviously whatever DA does works, but, like, taking Sean out of the building, there has to be something, and maybe they overcome it all, but we knew what the floor was kind of before with, you know, look at the 16, like, the starters, you know, in 2016, and, like, they're still winning seven games. Like, you knew what the floor was with Sean. We don't know what the floor is without Sean in the building.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people, like y'all were saying, they forget what's happened in the past. Somebody the other day told me, they're like, well, man, we could be good if Jameis will just throw, like, you know, 15 interceptions or less. And I was like, Drew Brees threw 14 or more interceptions 9 times. Like, it wasn't like we weren't slinging it around. And I think he threw 19 in a season. And I mean, he's been over 15 8 times.
You should automatically just ignore someone who starts to bring up the 30 interceptions. I mean, because that person clearly doesn't know what they're talking about.
The 30 interceptions is an anomaly, not him doing well.
And it's circumstantially completely different. He was in a different team with different coaches, different system. Every one of his quarterbacks, especially in their first year in his offense, throws a lot more interceptions than maybe they do regularly.
If he starts doing that, Andy Dalton's going to be the starter. Like, it just wouldn't ever happen. There's no way he's ever throwing a 30 interceptions. But yeah, just regardless, like, he's just not gonna, period. Like, if he starts every game, he's not gonna throw 30 interceptions. He's not gonna throw 25. Like, that's just not something that's gonna happen.
Okay. It's just, well, and I will say, and you the stuff that Jameis is doing, the way he's talking, the way he's carrying himself, the way he looks, obviously with his, I mean, he's in a lot better shape than he's ever been in his life. He's still a very young man. He's 27 years old. He's just kind of coming into maturity. And I think all of us, me too, I mean, wanting to hate him as a Tampa Bay quarterback just because I hated Tampa Bay. He was just a young kid that like kind of got by on just being better than everybody else in high school and at Florida State and even at Tampa Bay and winning, you know, being number one overall draft pick. He didn't have anybody else holding him accountable because he was good. It's finally time that he's doing it to himself. It's really good to see. Even the speeches he was given at rookie camp and stuff today is awesome.
Yeah, he needs to find a place where he's playing a little more confident. And it's kind of weird to say that because I think his confidence kind of got him in trouble before. But I thought last year there was an overcorrection with it. And then, you know, the thing with him, it wasn't the throws. It was the throws he didn't make. And when you kind of go through it and it's like, man, he had this here and he had that there. And it wasn't like the Teddy Bridgewater stuff like that drastic. But there were a few things where it just kind of felt like Jameis, when he was kind of feeling good about what he was doing, was making some of these throws. But I think some of those throws he didn't make also are the result of like, man, that's Kenny Stills. And he dropped three of my passes and you know, the safety's kind of close. And if he doesn't catch it, what happens? So I think having better players, being in a system, I think some of that stuff corrects itself. But I think that's the missing frontier for him. I think he kind of rewired himself last year and proved that he can go a good stretch and not put himself in these troublesome situations. And then the other thing is those throws over the middle and attacking that area of the field. And, you know, I think
noticing linebackers.
Yeah, that's it right there. That was kind of where he got himself in trouble before is not seeing those guys. So there was like a reluctance to go to that area of the field. I think it was, again, probably because there weren't good over the middle weapons on this team. And that's part of it. But I also think it was kind of, all right, I'm not going to make mistakes because people don't forgive me for my mistakes, but he's got to get beyond that. And, you know, I think we'll see some of that this year.
It was also the most unfair thing that his entire offseason was a quarterback competition. So he wanted to win the starting job so he couldn't throw interceptions. So he couldn't try all those things you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so that's just a bad mindset to get in through. Drew threw tons of interceptions in the offseason and training camps and in the, you know, well, he didn't play many preseason games, but
Marcus Williams got him four times in one day.
Right.
Yeah. So
Jameis didn't get to play around and do that and find out. Like you said, he went into the season and did a good job of not throwing interceptions, but there's a lot of plays where he should have been throwing the ball to some different people. So,
yeah, I agree for sure.
All right, James, you got any more questions?
The one for me, kind of from a UK perspective, obviously the Saints have got a game over in London this year. First question is, are you coming to cover the game?
Yeah, I'll be there. My wife's coming with me. Yeah, we'll be out there all week for sure.
Cool. And then, did you come in 2017 for the Dolphins game?
Yeah, I was out there for that. That was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good for us over here as well. So it's just like, what are you looking forward to coming over to London again?
Well, I mean, I guess starting out the first time, that was the first time I ever left the country in my life. So it, like the whole thing was just kind of overwhelming to me. But look, I like it over there. Like just being around place, like you're walking by a pub and like it just kind of makes you realize how young America is. Like you see these signs of like when things were established and it's just like before our country even existed. So like that's crazy. And, you know, last time I was trying to see everything, like, I think this time we can kind of like zero down into, you know, more areas of interest and doing those things. And then, you know, also Arsenal and Spurs are playing Saturday before that game. So I'm definitely going to be in there for that. That's, you know, I saw a Queen's Park Rangers game last time, which isn't quite the same experience.
Not,
I think
it's not so, the same.
Yeah. So we got to do the real deal this time. So
James,
yeah,
I mean, is a season ticket holder. He's a big fan.
Oh, nice.
Of who? No. So what I would say is the Arsenal Spurs game is they haven't officially announced the kickoff time for that one yet. So all I know is it definitely won't be the Sunday.
Yeah, well, it whatever it is, I'm gonna make it work one way or another. That's a must this time. So, yeah, last time I went, I was a little overwhelmed by the prices of the tickets for those games, but I'm ready this time. I got my money set aside. We're good to go.
It's if you think Queen's Park Rangers was expensive,
no, it's like $400 to get into a Premier League game. It's crazy, but yeah,
it can be. Yeah, it can be.
Wow.
It can be. So yeah, we're looking forward to having you over here. Definitely. We've got, I think you probably know, you've got quite a big subscriber base from the UK. So
Yeah, do you track that, Nick, as far as where people are subscribing and listening from and all?
A little bit, yeah, for sure. I mean, we got people in, it's just crazy to kind of see like how many countries are checked off. Like, it's just like, wow, there's a Saints fan there. Like, that's crazy. But yeah, definitely there's a, we have a good base in the UK, and we're planning on doing an event somewhere on a Friday night. I got someone working on it. I have no idea like what the details are at this point, but when we get that figured out, we'll share it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And you know, I think there's going to be a handful of people in the media are going to come through there and kind of show some support. And
oh, very cool.
Yeah, it'll be cool to get that interaction.
Yeah, no, it'll be good to do that. Yeah.
Had one question about something that we've gone back and forth about, and I can't tell if this is the thing I'm the most excited about or most scared about with this season. There's a mixture of CJ, GJ, Tyrann Mathieu, and even Marcus May there in the middle that are really exciting guys that you don't know where they're going to line up and could create a whole bunch of turnovers. Those are also three guys that don't necessarily play the position the way it's written in the book and can also go off script. And that also, that Marcus Williams was the opposite of that. He was exactly where you're supposed to be reading, kind of the most boring safety ever, but that made his plays. Is there risk there for real with those guys and the way that they kind of go off script and aren't necessarily where they're supposed to be, and they're looking to make the big splash play?
I think you got to do that within the structure of the defense, but I think that the structure of the defense overall is going to change too. Like, I don't think we'll see, you know, cover one single high safety man was their primary coverage last year. And that's because Marcus Williams does do everything by the book, and he has the most insane range probably in the NFL. Like, that's probably his best trait is just that sideline, the sideline ability and to get everywhere. But I don't think these guys have that. Marcus May has some of it. Like, I think you can play him up there and be cool. I think Tyrann can do that to some degree. But I think we're probably going to see more two safety type stuff. And you know, within that, one guy can drop down and you kind of use your keys and read it and you make your plays that way. But, you know, I believe this was really their vision, though. Like, I think they wanted these types of players. I don't, you know, they spent the money. I don't think that there was a super huge push to keep things the same. I think, yeah, you know, if people were being honest and they told you what the free agent board looked like, you know, in February, I think Tyrann Mathieu's name was really high on that list, even though it took a while to kind of get to that point. So, you know, I think this is the design, and I think they want to be more dynamic and have those playmakers. And I think that there's just kind of a vision of how to rein all that in and fit all those pieces together, because like, I think this is what they wanted. I don't think it was a reaction to losing somebody. I think this is exactly how they wanted the pieces.
This is the plan.
Yeah.
They let him go knowing that they were going to go here anyway, kind of.
Yeah. Thing. Hoping, you know, definitely getting May and then hoping that everything lined up with Tyrann. I think there was a value on it. And if somebody wanted to overpay, like, I think they were fine with trying to figure something else out. I think maybe Brisker would have probably been more of a priority if they hadn't known that they were going to sign Tyrann after the draft.
Is the nature of the business where they kind of felt like there was a reason they felt confident they would get Mathieu and kind of way before they did?
It can't be like the NBA where everybody knows where they're going and during the non-negotiating period, but you've talked to everybody. It can't be.
I don't know if anybody would ever answer that truthfully, because, you know, waiting until that certain date, you don't lose that draft pick. So I don't know. But it seemed like going through the draft and not, not taking a safety and then, oh, wow, look, you know, like, I think
the
maybe,
biggest hole on the team.
Yeah.
I think while all the fans and podcasters are overreacting. What the hell?
The one that we couldn't have ever, like, it couldn't have been in the plans the way it worked out, that I just still can't believe, is the way Jarvis Landry, one, the amount that he signed for, but two, how he looks. He looks like Jarvis Landry that was 2 or 3 years. I mean, he's
happy.
And I've already gone on here and I've predicted that he's going to lead the team in receptions this year. I think he's going to get a big, I can see with Michael Thomas getting some play and Olave being down the field and Landry being right there in the middle, leading the team in receptions. I think he looks amazing. And I think he'll actually get paid next year.
Yeah, I think so too. He would have got paid this year, I think, but he just kind of mismanaged that market. There was, you know, trying to get the couple specific locations, money wasn't there, let's go over his agent, you know. I think a lot of things just kind of didn't line up for him this offseason, and he kind of put himself in a position where the money wasn't going to be there. So then it's like, well, what situation is best for me? Where am I going to be happiest? Like, if I'm taking this little bit amount of money, you know, I think he kind of ended up here, you know, for reasons other than that. So yeah, I think he's going to go out, he's going to get paid. And this is just kind of the, you know, the price he has to pay, I guess, for not maybe managing his off season, the most optimal way.
Gets paid by the Saints or gets paid by someone else?
You know, it's a good question. Like if Mike's good and then he's bought in and you got Olave, you know, how much can you spend at that position? It's tough, but like if he becomes like a key player they can't live without, and Jameis has this like incredible season and he is the
lead the team leader.
Yeah. Some, you know, maybe that changes a little bit, but I would probably predict that, you know, he goes somewhere else. And, you know, if he does hit the market, there's probably wanting to make up for some of the money that was lost too. So you're probably trying to maximize it at that point. So I guess right now I would guess against it, but yeah, you never know. The circumstances could dictate that he stays, and maybe he just loves it here so much that maybe some of that, you know, getting back isn't something that's a priority for him.
So crazy that he came in the league and set the record for most receptions at 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, and 4 year. Those all get broken by Michael Thomas, who we find out now that he had some sort of relationship with from when Michael Thomas was in high school. And then now them playing together and Jarvis maybe being the more healthy one, at least to start the training camp. And just the way that all has worked out and interweaved together is pretty incredible. And I mean, the best case scenario of it
got a song in mind.
Pretty damn good best case
during the season. We'll edit a song in. Got a song.
But speaking of songs, what song should replace halftime?
Oh. Okay. Well, look, I mean, like, I don't think you should be playing a song from two guys from Atlanta. Maybe like, let's start
you.
With that. Like,
right.
Yeah. Like get something more local than that. So, I don't know. It's just such a part of the atmosphere now, though. Like, it's weird, but look, I think that one needs to go. I don't want to say what other song I'm sick of, but you know, there's another song that the people have attached to a little too much. That was maybe too tied into the 2018 season. That's still everywhere at Louisiana Sports.
Thing is, they need, right? But sometimes that stuff just happens organically. It happens by, like, maybe it's not, or at least the better thing times that it happens is when it is organic and not contrived, or the, you know, the marketing. Like, I always say that about Atlanta, is that everything about Atlanta and their marketing department is too contrived, it's too desperate, it's too forced, it just doesn't feel genuine or authentic. And then you look at, and maybe I'm being a homer, but you look at the Saints,
probably
it's a lot more real. Homegrown. Atlanta has no culture, let's be honest,
you know? Speaking of the Super Bowl, Nick, have you gone back and, I mean, obviously you've watched probably the Saints Super Bowl, but did you ever go back and actually watch the playoff run, or watch that whole season, kind of, as it's a there's lots of memories for us that kind of set.
Yeah, I've seen every game they played since 2006.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah, that have been for your Drew Brees article.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah,
research. I have a quick question too. Is do you enjoy covering the business side of the NFL and the Saints, or kind of like the games themselves and the player performance analysis?
I like the business side, you know, the cap, all that stuff. I think it's interesting. I like analyzing the game. You know, the stuff I don't like is, you know, the Vegas arrests, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. Like I have no interest in any of that. Like, it's just, you know, kind of, you know, just get it out of here. Like, you gotta acknowledge it. But yeah, I mean, I don't enjoy any of that stuff. Like, basically anything between the field, I don't care what they say on social media. I don't care about somebody making a, you know, a weird comment. Like, it's just like what happens on the field and the things that put people on the field, like as far as the cap and all that stuff. Those are the things that interest me. But like all the other stuff, like I could definitely do without it.
It's like hearing you say that, I see that reflected in your coverage and what you write and what you put on your show. And
I appreciate
for
that.
One, I appreciate that you do that.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that you appreciate that. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I mean, Jeff is one that, I mean, Saints Twitter drives him insane, where like he almost like doesn't get on Twitter very much anymore, and he used to, just because this there's it's obviously, I think all of Twitter is probably nonsense.
Overreactionary, yeah.
but just I know he's, even specifically Saints Twitter drives him insane, where it's you do a good job of keeping a level head, and then every once in a while you kind of
hit somebody with logic
and they don't know what you're talking about.
Every once in a while, like, somebody gets me a little out of character and I gotta and I say something and a lot of time I delete them after I let them off, but once in a while, like, I let them, it's just like it's too late. But yeah, I hate it, like, when someone kind of gets me to bark back at them, because, like, that's what they want. And then, like, you see their response, like, then they just start arguing with everybody, and, like, it just makes them so happy. And it's just like,
a few times it was a national media guy from another team, like a big media guy from, like, I think it was a Seahawks guy that said something stupid about cap. And I mean, he finally was just like, I don't know who the hell this Nick Underhill is, but okay, y'all told me I don't understand the cap, right?
Yeah.
When Nick linked him to the article, right? You were like, just all you did was like, here, and then just linked him to your article.
Okay, well, so the cap thing is one thing where I have no mercy for anyone, because, like, you can just figure it out, and it's just like somebody new every year is like, aha, like, the Saints are in a bad cap situation. They can't get out. They're going to have to get rid of, you know, every single player. And it's like, this just doesn't happen. Like, you're choosing to not understand how this works at this point. So yeah, I have no mercy for those people.
Well, there's
that
nothing,
goes back to my earlier question about, like, national or just anybody. It's lazy journalism. I'm going to take the narrative that, like, the whole Drew Brees declining arm strength that was probably started about 2 years early, too early maybe, or maybe we just didn't want to admit it. But yeah, there's about a certain, or Sean Payton going to Dallas every year. It's kind of like you can set your watch to when certain things were going to be said, because it was the only headline that people could generate about the Saints, because they were too lazy to think of anything new or original.
Yeah,
there was not a better hell. Saints are in cap hell. We're gonna have a surplus next year going into the offseason, and we're still gonna be in cap hell.
I will say, for me, Nick, there's not a better SmackDown you've done, except for when you use, like, someone's name in a promo code for how to save $10 or something. That's been the best ones. You've done that a couple of times, and it's like, it's
we'll bring it back at some point.
that's polite way of putting someone in their place.
Here, let me help you.
That's right. Yeah.
We've made a lot of references to your articles and your podcast and all. Where can people find you, and what's the best way to get all your information and follow you?
Yeah. The website is neworleans.football. And I'm on Twitter, Nick_Underhill. And we got a podcast every Tuesday night. You can type in NOF.TV, find it on YouTube, 8 o'clock. We go live.
We're very clear about, like, I think in a time where it's very convoluted about who is sports media versus sports fans with the podcast and Twitter, we've always been very open about that. We are fans. We normally start shows letting people know this is a fan show for fans.
We feel like we understand
the game and all, but, like, we also give our opinions, and we do instant reactions right after the game that are sometimes ridiculous, because
so are mine sometimes right after the game. So we
get there, but we do reference a lot, like, the way that you cover the game and the information that we get from you. And I'll tell you, I think that the prices you charge and the coverage that we get is a heck of a deal. It's a steal. And any real Saints fan, even if you're a casual fan, needs to follow it, and just, like, you can have better conversations and understanding the game if you follow Nick and subscribe.
Well, like we said too, I mean, it's what we get. The reason I think we reference you more than anybody else is the level-headed, rational point of view, and the again, not getting sucked into the chaos or sucked into the drama, the flavor of the week from. And I, for one, am happy with the route you take, because it is something that we as Saints fans want and crave. And then to have you specifically, I think there's something about, again, like, there's something with Sean Payton that with him not in the building, you lose that. I think there's something with Nick Underhill that if there were somebody else trying to provide the same thing you're providing, it wouldn't be the same. I because what you do feels genuine and it feels authentic.
We lost a lot the year you went back to New England, even though you did still have your burner account.
Yeah, I lost a lot too, though. You know, that was a good year for me, and a bad year in some aspects. But, like, yeah, the clarity and finding out what I had lost, and, like, where my heart was and where I wanted to live and the people I wanted reading my stuff. That was the main thing. Like, Saints fans, like, appreciate things, and it's just kind of, you know, when people appreciate what you're doing, like, it gives you energy and you feed off that. And, you know, not having that, I think clarified the level of connection I had to the city and the fan base. So, I mean, yeah, I lost a lot, but I gained a lot, and you know, it was an interesting year, but I'm happy with where we're at now.
talking about the other part, there are a lot of podcasts like ours that are free and they're priced correctly. And Nick, I've always kind of given you extra credit for, like, there's a lot of people that go to New Orleans for college and they've never been to New Orleans. They're from Indiana and then they just never leave the city. It's a city that you can fall in love with. And whether it's as a Saints fan or just New Orleans in general, I think it says a lot that the way that when you left, you probably could have had a game plan of a business that you feel like with your knowledge of football could have gone anywhere and kind of built some success and got it. I think the fact that you chose New Orleans for it says something about the love for the city, the love for the team, but also like the relationship that you have with the fans. And I think that you're always going to get credit for that, even maybe as much or more than somebody that was necessarily born in New Orleans, because you've chosen it. You've chosen the fan base and the team.
Well, I think they chose me, but yeah.
If we ever meet up in England, then we'll make sure do not order blood sausage from James.
It's not. It's called black pudding. It's not called
blood sausage. I looked it up. Black and it's blood sausage.
It's black pudding, and you've got to try it. You will try it.
No, I won't. I'll eat a lot of things, but I'm not eating black pudding blood sausage. Anyway, all right, that's all the show we have for you right now. We'll thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week, telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol Podcast. Follow us on Facebook, search for Dome Patrol Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast and at Dome Patrol UK. We're on TikTok, Dome Patrol Prods. That's PRODZ. And if you want to listen to us the old-fashioned way, you can always go to DomePatrolPodcast.com. Say bye-bye, donkeys.
Take it easy. Hey, hey,
yeah. Come on, everybody, take a trip with me. Woo! Down to Mississippi, down to New Orleans, yeah, yeah. Where the honeysuckle hanging on a honeysuckle vine. Where love is blooming there all the time. Every Southern belle is a Mississippi queen. Down the Mississippi, down to New Orleans. Oh, listen to the music with a Dixieland beat. Yeah. I said, the man, know your vibes, I don't feel the air. Yeah, you ain't been to heaven if you ain't been there. Honeysuckle hanging from a hollow tree down in Mississippi, down in New Orleans.
Hey, I said,